This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Kepler's Got Game.
And No Secrets in Supercomputing.
Hello, everyone, and good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for March 23rd, 2012. Available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined by Addison Snell of Intersect 360 Research. Hey, good morning, Addison.
Good morning, Michael.
Well, our long wait for the first Kepler GPUs is over. NVIDIA announced a couple of them this week for the gaming community, but a lot of excitement in the community about those. We've been waiting for it. It seems like a couple years now after they announced the architecture way back 2010, I think, when they first talked about those. And we got the first ones out.
Yeah, this is a kind of a new dynamic that we have. We've had this with x86 processors where a new architecture gets launched, but sometimes it's initially available for the enterprise data center space before it's in HPC. Right. Here we have it with GPUs coming out, and they show up in game systems first, and then we can start repurposing them as accelerators.
Right, and this is actually a little different than what NVIDIA's done in the past. These are like mid-range GPUs for desktops and laptops, notebooks. Usually they would put out a big one first, but in this case, they kind of went for the heart of the market, and these aren't anything, well, I mean, they're somewhat like they're going to be in the HPC devices, but this is a much smaller, less capable GPU than the second version that's going to come out that we're going to see towards the end of the year.
Right. And this gets into, you know, the pace of development that NVIDIA is able to maintain. We talked before that one of the gating factors for accelerators in HPC has been with a custom chip, it's hard to maintain the rate of development that Intel drives or that innovation generally drives from the enterprise data center, the very large enterprise data center market. In this case, NVIDIA is driven by the gaming market and maintains a very quick pace of development. And we see these advancements eventually make it over into HPC because of the number of flops they're delivering.
Right. And now, even for NVIDIA more so, they're being driven by the mobile market like everybody else. And part of that is obviously flowed into Kepler because a lot of what Kepler's about as far as the architecture goes is performance per watt. It's not anymore about raw performance for a given die, it's about getting the most amount of performance out of the least amount of wattage.
You know, it's funny because you go back to the Intel launch that we just covered, and Intel talked a lot about the mobile processors and cloud as driving the need for a lot of processing power. And they, of course, were talking about the data center power that was behind it all in terms of processing everything. But it was a bit ironic in terms of a lot of the imagery they were using with regards to the tablets, the mobile processors, which are increasingly based on ARM.
Right, right. You're right. But obviously they're interested in that space, and in the same way NVIDIA is interested, and they're moving very aggressively into that. And sort of, I think the sort of mid-range launch maybe underlines that. But yeah, we won't have to wait too long to see the bigger, more powerful chips come out that'll go into the HPC Tesla line. They're still aiming for like Q4 for production. And there's already, of course, we've talked about Titan and Blue Waters, which will be the recipient of those Kepler GPUs that are upcoming.
Yeah, it becomes a kind of an important battleground, as we've been saying, for, you know, by the end of 2012, because you have not only the new Kepler chips, but you also have the Intel Mic chips hitting the market at around the same time. And this is, you know, as we move into these heterogeneous architectures that'll start taking over more of HPC, seeing how many people adopt the Mic architecture in particular as opposed to the Kepler upgrades is going to be one of the first indications of how the processor war here is going to start to play out.
Right. Now, although I think NVIDIA is going to beat at least the initial Mic, the Knight's Corner, to the market, we're expecting those in probably not until early 2013, 13, unless Intel kind of really steps it up and tries to get one out early. But and maybe this will.
I bet we'll see some of the first Intel mics out there before the general availability is announced, just as we did with the Sandy Bridge processors, right?
Right. I think the Stampede supercomputer they talked about, they're going to get some early access ones. But the general availability, I think NVIDIA sort of got them beat at this point, as long as they execute as well. I mean, it's not a slam dunk. This is a new 28 nanometer node for them. There's always some problems sometimes in moving to volume production on a new process technology, but that's the plan, and they're confident they're on target for that. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's something we'll keep looking at. You know, it's good progress for NVIDIA to have the first Kepler ones out. It's not HPC directly yet, but it kind of is in the sense that if they were flubbing this stage of the launch, it wouldn't bode well for the end of the year. And so far, everything seems to be going well for Kepler.
Yeah, it does. And there's a lot of excitement about it. And there's a lot of articles, obviously, in the gaming magazines that really delve into it. We just wrote it from the point of view of what the architecture means. It's going to be the same type of architecture. It's going to be more cores, probably slower clocks. I mean, a lot more cores and a lot slower clocks for the Kepler across the board, but a much enhanced, I guess, double precision capability for the HPC version coming out in a few months, and a lot more GPU computing features that are going to show up there that they haven't talked about yet. I'm assuming we're all going to hear about that at the upcoming GTC conference NVIDIA is going to put together.
That's right. That's in May.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's not too far off. I mean, I think it's going to be a paper launch for Kepler for HPC, but I'm sure there's going to be a lot of information about that in just about 6 weeks, I guess.
Great. Well, that's something that we'll get a lot of information about. Let's transition now to something that's hard to get information about because it's all secret.
Yeah, that story, a lot of people caught it about in Wired, about the NSA basically doing a lot of supercomputing underneath the covers to do domestic and foreign surveillance of all sorts of data feeds. Some of it is quite controversial because, of course, the domestic surveillance can involve emails and phone calls and all things that people are very concerned about. But they've built a facility in Utah and the supercomputing part at Oak Ridge National Lab, right. And they're continuing to build that out, it sounds like.
Right. So the heart of the story is the idea of this new data center, or growing data center in Bluffdale, Utah, that they're starting to bring up, where they're talking about eventually storing and analyzing yottabytes of data. Now we'll come back to that number in a minute. but what really drove the controversy is that Wired Magazine is claiming sources that are talking about what kinds of surveillance they're doing there, and whether or not it involves illegal domestic spying. The NSA has denied all allegations of domestic spying, but it ties into HPC because it brings up the big data side of how much data is there, how much are they going to analyze it, and how do you do that? What kind of supercomputers do you need for it?
Right. Well, it's pretty easy, you can see, to get the exabytes of data with what you've got now. I mean, if you just tap into everybody's email, start recording phone calls, financial transactions, all these things that around people's lives in the U.S. or anywhere, you can easily get up to exabytes of data very quickly.
You could get up to the desire to get to exabytes or zettabytes, but getting to yottabytes here, we've skipped an entire prefix, right? So a yottabyte, let's dig into this. That's a million exabytes.
Yeah, a million and, exabytes.
You know, the biggest tape libraries now can scale up to an exabyte, so you can put in an exabyte facility, but those are, you know, the biggest storage libraries that are out there right now, and, you know, to get to a yottabyte, you'd be talking about a million of those. It seems unlikely to me that they've got an infrastructure right now that's anywhere even approaching a yottabyte or even a zettabyte.
No, and they're definitely thinking about this for the future, but the quote that Wired came up with was actually out of a 2007 DOD report, so they were not only thinking about it now, they were thinking about it 5 years ago.
I think they were thinking about what's the largest prefix that they know. talking about that today, it'd be talking about zettaflops, and you know, it's just not a practical conversation to be having yet. However, I'm sure they do have tons of data. The other interesting implication, though, is that they were talking about having all of this data in Bluffdale, Utah, and analyzing it with the supercomputers in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. To me, having the data in one place and the supercomputer in another place also didn't quite make sense.
Yeah, well, it looks like that's the setup they have today. I mean, they have a data center there now, and they're building an even bigger one, a 65-megawatt data center in Utah. Yeah. But and they've already got, if we can believe the report, I think we can, that the supercomputer is up and running at Oak Ridge National Lab right now, and it's a big one. So somehow they're, whatever data they're analyzing today to do that decryption, which is basically what they need the supercomputer for, to decrypt the data they've collected, they're transferring across the country, and we can only speculate on how that transfer is occurring because it is a lot of
I think it data. Occurs by plane. I think they take tapes and put them on the plane, maybe discs, but probably tapes, and put them on the plane and fly them across. Unless you think there's private fiber that no one that's guarded, that no one has access to, that runs from Utah to Tennessee.
Yeah. Well, certainly if you're data mining exabytes of data, it does seem like you'd sort of fly that in and load it up
so,
locally.
Yeah, I think probably what we're looking at is, first of all, I don't think it's only data in Utah. I think that there must be a certain amount of compute that's in there doing probably complex event processing on data as it's ingested, looking for interesting patterns. But anything that's encrypted or not of immediate use that gets stored off, they save for later. And they probably send samples of that data to Oak Ridge to say, here, can you crack this? Right. And that's where, you know, you just break off some of the encrypted data, you work on it, new decryption algorithms, try to break through it at Oak Ridge. And if you do find a way to decrypt it all, that's when all of a sudden you'll either start installing a massive supercomputer closer to the data in Utah, or you'll have a huge convoy of armored trucks carrying tape libraries across the country from one time zone to the next.
Yeah, and we should mention that supercomputer.
Two time zones across.
Two time zones, right. That supercomputer at Oak Ridge, if the report is accurate, that was a very large supercomputer, possibly something equivalent to Jaguar, which used to be the number one supercomputer in the world, now is number three. And that's, of course, has been built upon over a few years. But when they started it up, at least, it was faster than the original Jaguar supercomputer. So I'm assuming there's a petascale system in there running right now doing these things. Then
I don't see why this would have to be a different supercomputer than the ones we already know about, right?
No.
They could just reserve Titan for a cryptanalysis run at a certain time.
Well, except you have to classify that. I think there's some logistics problem with having unclassified supercomputers become classified all of a sudden. This thing, I guess...
It's a government research lab. I bet they could do it.
The one they've got supposedly is hidden, but it's inside a building that is sort of an unmarked thing and is not accessible to unclassified people and all sorts of things. So it's a separate unit, and they're thinking they're going to build upon that, and they're looking like everybody else. Right. They're looking to build an exascale system by 2018 to do some of this decryption. I mean, the thing that petascale has made possible and exascale will make even more possible is the encryption schemes take a lot of computing power to process. So there's like 128-bit encryption, and then it's all the way up to, I think, some 512-bit. And there's a lot of brute force computation that needs to take place. But all of a sudden, with these petascale systems, you can start to do it and not have to take a century to do a small data set. You can do it in somewhat real time, or not real time, but at least in a reasonable amount of time. So the NSA is very interested, obviously, in the technology, and they're very interested in getting exascale when everybody else does.
Oh, yeah. I don't doubt that there's an application for these things. I also don't doubt that we'll have increasing amounts of awareness of what things are going on. You know, one of the things is it gets harder for even the NSA to keep these secrets. So you put a supercomputer in and people find out about it. It took a lot of people to build and install and support these sorts of things. And, you know, now cryptanalysis has involved supercomputers ever since World War II, but there's a better information network now than there was then. And, you know, you get a thing like this where an analyst leaves the program and someone can pay him for the story that winds up in Wired or on CNN or somewhere else.
Right, right. It is harder to hide these things. I mean, you know, we're all talking about Moore's Law, and the chips themselves are getting more powerful, but to keep up with the pace of HPC, the systems are getting bigger and they're getting more power intensive. So they need lots of power. I mean, here we're talking already it's tens of megawatts, possibly for the storage, certainly, and maybe single digit megawatts for the supercomputer. And then, you know, just the size of these things, you just can't hide them. You have to have
I think they should start planning for a yottawatt facility.
Yeah, like the whole country. So that's interesting, and there's a lot of press on this, obviously, and the NSA is obviously very kind of upset this has come out, but they're trying to answer the questions to Congress now. And I'm sure this will get a lot more attention, and like you said, it's going to be a lot harder for the NSA to hide these things now that these stories come out and everybody knows where to look.
Well, I'll be at one of the better conferences for government HPC next week at the National HPC Conference in Newport, Rhode Island. I'm on the agenda there, and I wonder if this will be one of the fun topics of conversation we might have.
I think it will be. I think, yeah, there's going to be a lot of DoD people there, maybe some three-letter agency people in the audience that we don't know about. So,
and
yeah.
On Wednesday, they've got a day with a lot of digital manufacturing content, which will also be interesting.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that conference, and I'll be happy to see you there.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, until next week.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.